In brightest day,
in blackest night.
Crush your enemies, see them driven before you, to hear the lamentation of the women.
And welcome to Comic Culture, the radio show that champions the local comic book shop. We're broadcasting on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio, and we're podcasting at comicbookdaily.com and getthepointradio.com. I am Walter Duralia, Overstreet Price Guide Advisor.
And I am Chris Owen, Professor of Comic History at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
And as always, we are your heralds of Galactus.
Surfing the world of comic books for content you can devour. I really got to read these things a little bit better.
Yes.
Right?
So what Chris said basically was that we are surfing the world of comics for content that you, our Galacti, can devour.
I think they got that.
Okay.
No? Well, I don't know. Anyways, you know what? Let's move on. Horrible intro,
please.
But you know what? What makes it all better is that our great, great guest we have on here today, local and internationally renowned artist, Mr. Greg Hyland, is here. Greg, how are you today?
How's it going, eh?
I'm great, thanks. Great. Okay. Yeah, I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
I'm fine. How are you, Greg?
I'm fine. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
All right. Excellent. That's
good to be here.
Okay, Chris, help us out of this.
All right.
We're in a loop.
I got to say, Chris, I haven't seen you in a long time, but the afro is looking.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it is so big.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been using a lot of Jerry Curl.
Oh, my God. It looks good. It looks good.
They were our sponsor about a month ago. They sent us a case.
Yeah.
So he figured, I'll grow it.
Oh, you got to do it. You got to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Greg, great to have you on the show. As always, Greg, we start the show off with highlighting some of the new comics that are hitting local comic book shops today, Wednesday, and we'll just basically give a few examples. But first, we're going to have you read our sponsor for new this week.
Very, very good. Well, Comic Culture is brought to you by Advanced Idea Mechanics, bringing you all your villainous weaponry needs since 1966.
Well, you're just as good as I am, eh? Weaponry needs.
I'm quite content with...
Yeah, I'm not expecting that check to clear.
All right.
Words read good.
Well, it looks like we're going to need some new sponsors.
Oh, no.
Well, you know what? And, you know, these guys are trying to bust through because we've had Acme.
Yes, that's true. And now AIM is here.
AIM is here. So
they're good. They're just some good people.
All right. Well, let's keep going here. Of course, we're on to the new this week, Walt.
All right, Chris. New this week, we're going to talk about, we could start with Action Comics number 3. Hits your local comic book shops today. I don't know, Greg, you've been reading Action Comics. At the shop, there's a lot of talk of action. People are really liking the Action Comics. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you liking the Action Comics?
I'm liking it. It seems to be one of the new 52 titles that people talk about as being really good. Now, that could also be, as soon as you attach Grant Morrison to something, people automatically say, oh, I love Grant Morrison. He's great. And I like Grant Morrison, but I also think he's probably one of the most inconsistent writers around.
I agree.
But I find the action book, I don't find it as good as what everybody is going on about, but I think it's one of the more interesting titles.
Right.
So I agree that it's up there. So I haven't read number 3 yet.
Now,
but I've read
one of the things I liked about Action is that it's got two different artists. It's got Rags Morales and Gene Ha in it. And Gene Ha seems to, I like the dichotomy of the two different art styles in it, because I think that for the stories that are being told in it, I think it really, really matches up well. but that's just my own opinion.
That's you. You are an art groupie.
I am. And I
didn't even notice there was two different
artists.
Well,
there is a number three.
Professional art, Greg Hyland, yeah. Professional artist making commentary.
I'm a big fan of Gene Haw ever since he was doing Top Ten and stuff like that back in the day by Alan Moore. Of course, we all know that Alan Moore doesn't work for DC anymore, but that's besides the point.
Yeah. All right, so Action Comics number three, one of the plethora of DC number threes.
The new number threes.
Yeah, now you imagine the guy, can I get my that new DC number three that came out today?
Well, this is the thing. We were talking before the show about the fact that, every month it's just like, they're all number threes now. Like, do you have any comics? Yeah, I got number three.
Yeah.
All
the number threes.
Yeah, which one are you missing? Number fours. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's the problem.
It's going to get boring. It's going to get weird by the time
it's
they hit
It's going to be kind of weird, and it is a little bit boring because there's no real highlights, right? Because now all of a sudden, it's not like before. We're like, hey, this issue is reaching number 600. It's like, I guess they're all reaching 50. Yeah.
Well, you know what you need? You need like a comic shop office pool, a big grid.
Yes.
On picking on which title is off first, which title is off second, which title is off third. It's like an NFL season, right?
That's a great idea.
At the end of it, it's like the guy that picked the most accurate or the girl that picked the most accurate, death list or whatever.
Okay, so let's just.
What do you mean Mr. Terrific number 11 didn't come out?
Okay, so, just for our own little roundtable discussion here, out of the new 52, which one do you think is going to get canned first?
Good question. I think Mr. Terrific. Voodoo. Voodoo. I'm going Voodoo.
Voodoo.
Oh, the voodoo that you do.
I'm going to say Stormwatch.
Stormwatch?
Yeah.
Greg? Over to you, Greg.
Anytime now. Greg. Anytime now, Greg.
What's that? Who said what now? I don't know. I mean, I can't see the Western... The All-Star Western doing well.
It just seems like Hex got like fanboys attached to him. You know,
I'm glad that they tried to do things by having horror comics and Western comics and war comics, but I really don't think they're going to last.
So you think the war one?
I think the war one, the Western one, and maybe some of those weird horror ones.
Right, even though
I hear people like them, but I think it's going to just like mainstream comics are that it's going to. Boil down to the superheroes and the superheroes.
Yeah.
Now, why didn't they bring Jerry Lewis back with a new?
Yeah, that would be good.
Sugar and Spike.
Yeah. I mean, Sugar and Spike, but Jerry Lewis lasted like 12 years of
over 100.
Does anybody even know who Jerry Lewis is anymore?
Like, I don't think even Jerry Lewis knows who he is.
Good point. All right. So Greg's pick for the last one to go is the Western, the War, and a bunch of those other
ones.
Otherwise, I would have said Mr. Terrific, but you already said that as far as the superheroes go.
Okay.
Maybe Captain Atom. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's. Right.
Hawk and Dove.
Hawk and Dove. I actually got Hawk and Dove number three in my hand. I pulled that one out because you know what Hawk and Dove number three features, guys.
It features two female heroines going at it.
Heroines.
Actually, I don't know if they're both heroines, but no, I think one of them. I don't even know.
It's a villainine.
It could be a villainine. Yeah.
It's the classic catfight.
Yeah, it's a catfight cover. Yeah. Looks great.
Now, in the old days,
it would look great if it wasn't drawn by Rob Liefeld.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
The catfight cover is a classic tradition in comics.
It is.
That would make boys buy young
drool
by the thing. If Supergirl is pulling out Lois Lane's hair on the cover or something like that, everybody wanted that issue, right?
Right.
You see that, Greg? Look at that.
Even some of the older Batman comics, I remember there's one with Catwoman and Batwoman.
It's great stuff. That is a good catfight cover. Get into your local shop. Check that one out. All right, over to Marvel. Fear Itself 7.1 Captain America. So somebody's going to have to help me with this because I thought Fear Itself ended at 7.
Right.
And now we have 7.1. And I'm in the understanding that these are post-Fear Itself stories on the individual characters. There's going to be a Fear Itself.
Captain America, Thor, and Iron Man is from what I understand.
Right. Now, and as far as I understand, it's sort of like a recap and where they are now with the characters, right? That's what I had read. I haven't actually done all my investigations on all the different characters, but it's sort of like, this is sort of what's happened, and this is where they're sort of like the next step afterwards.
Right on. All right. So Fear Itself, 7.1, Captain America. Ed Brubaker writing, so that's a good reason to pick that up
for sure.
Alone from Marvel. And what do we have, Chris? We have
now. Hold on. Before we go on to the kids' pick of the week, we have our oddball comic because usually we like to do a DC, a Marvel, and then sort of an also ran kind of
an also ran.
Yeah, and we picked this one. So this is just boggles my mind. So
this one, see, every listeners, we picked this one.
It's Grimm Fairy Tales, Myths and Legends, number 9. Now, it's done by Xenoscope Comics, and here's the thing. I can't believe it's still going. Basically, here's a company that has decided to make comics. I think it was actually initially published by maybe Avatar or something like that.
Yep.
But initially, the Grimm Fairy Tales were put out, and basically, they were sort of sexy versions of all the Grimm's fairy tales.
Yes.
So it would have, like, you know, Cinderella in a sexy outfit, or it would have Snow White in a sexy outfit. Like, those kind of fairy tale type things.
Yeah.
But now it looks like they're just sort of taking it a little bit one step further, and it's almost like they're in their own universe now, and it's kind of like it's just different things. There is, of course, a sexy Little Mermaid, which you will not see in the Disney movie
yes,
at all.
Yes, definitely not the Disney version of the sexy mermaid. Now, you're right, that Grimm Fairy Tales, like, every week when the new this week, I often find myself putting them in the new this week
right.
order. And I'm telling you, the Grimm Fairy Tale section, there's like it's confusing. There's six or seven different little mini titles going on, little subtitles.
Well, I think this is one of those ploys where, you know, as long as they always get the number one, it's people are always going to buy that particular issue.
Right. So Grimm Fairy Tales. By the way, just dawned on me that Grimm, they're doing a new TV series.
Yeah, I think it's called Once Upon a Time or something,
Like something that.
Where they're
exploring the Grimm fairy tales in more of an adult kind of scarier
yeah,
way.
Yeah, it looks real. Apparently, it's the of the new season of TV, it's like one of the number one rated shows.
Excellent.
So,
all right, Chris.
So now we have our kids' pick of the week, and of course, we've got Charles Schulz's Peanuts number 0 by Kaboom.
Peanuts number 0. Now, this is the special preview issue. It's available at your local comic book shop today and all week and all month and until they sell out for only $1.
That's amazing.
And the great part about it is it's new stories.
Yeah, so now when you say it's new stories, the original stories were done by Charles Schulz, but it's sort of like they've taken ideas and adapted them into different stories by these new writers. So, you know, you've got all these new artists as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, you know, they've just sort of taken snippets of their ideas that Charles Schulz came up with and decided to come up with new stuff
and ran with them.
I don't know if I like this or not. I don't, you know, I'm sort of a classic Peanuts fan, and I don't know if I'm a big fan of having other people do his art.
Well, here's the thing.
And
we're going to get into this a little bit later with a couple other topics that we decided to talk about. But why should Charlie Brown, you know, why should his stories end with Charles Schulz's death?
Right.
You know, why are the only Charlie Brown stories ever told and drawn to be by Charles Schulz?
That's a good point.
I think that's robbing everybody of a character we all love and, you know, the continued exploits of a character we all love.
What do you think, Greg?
Yeah, I'm against it.
Are you? Yeah.
Because I think it's one thing for, you know, Batman to be done by lots of different artists and writers. But for some reason, to me anyway, a comic strip is sort of a personal vision by the creator. So Charles Schulz did Peanuts, and to me, that's the only one. Now, granted, you know, I think it was companies like Gold Key or Dell did Peanuts comics, probably in the 60s, and they were not done by Charles Schulz.
Right.
However, the comic strip was still running.
Right.
Right, at the same time. And other artists, although they probably didn't have their names in it, other artists were working on those comic books. Remember the same thing happening with Dennis the Menace comics, which I bought as a kid. And I could tell the difference between the art styles.
Yeah.
And it confused me, but they all still said Hank Ketchum on them.
Right.
So, and, you know, and probably with those comics, you know, Charles Schulz had approved them or something, but this just seems like a bit of a money grab to
me. You know, and again, like you're saying, like, I mean, I don't, you know, in the newspapers, You know, for example, the most recent one that I can remember is Adam is now being drawn by somebody new. It was Brian Bassett earlier.
And the new, I don't like the new ones, by the way.
I love them.
I like the old ones better.
The old ones are incredibly boring.
See, the old ones had more coffee jokes. And the new ones have more real bad puns.
The new ones are actually funny?
No, they're terrible puns revolving around the kids. But you see here, here's two differing opinions. But
right.
But also there is something about because granted, there are artists, there are comic strip creators that then get other artists to work on it or ghost it.
Right.
Like Jim Davis hasn't worked on Garfield for probably 20 odd years.
Right.
But he sort of oversees it all, right? But his name's still on it. Schultz was one of the only guys who did everything, who never had a ghostwriter or artist work on it.
Right.
Never had a replacement. Because, you know, Blondie, that started in the 30s, and it's still going.
Yeah. Right.
Somebody.
Yeah.
Right? Well, Dick Tracy, same thing, you know. But there's kind of an accomplishment that will probably never be repeated by Charles Schulz and Peanuts. And to do something like this comic seems a little odd.
We'll agree to disagree on this one. I think the character Peanuts is a character that Charles Schulz created that has every right to rise out of the Charles Schulz shadow and go into other creative talent.
Well,
that's my opinion.
You know, I think we'll get into this a little bit later, but that's it for new this week.
Yes, it is.
And, why not? And seeing as we're talking about all those old-timey kind of characters, let's get back into the old Super Friends.
Banded together from remote galaxies are 13 of the most sinister villains of all time, the Legion of Doom, dedicated to a single objective, the conquest of the universe. Only one group dares to challenge this intergalactic threat, the Super Friends. The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is the Challenge of the Super Friends.
Great stuff, Chris. Great stuff. And a great segue into the industry news feature of the show. We'll let Greg read our industry news sponsor.
Well, industry news is brought to you by the ice-related puns spouted by Mr. Freeze in the Batman and Robin movie. Come on, admit it. They were cool.
They were cool. Get it?
They were cool.
That's
a joke.
Wow. That's the way the ice cube crumbles.
Wow, that's witty writing.
Oh, boy.
Right.
All right, let's keep on going here.
All right, Chris, let's start industry news with some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
Some really, really cool stuff. Talking about some old comic books.
Yeah, so lots of old stuff going on. You know, it's funny how sometimes there would be like different weeks that would go by and, you know, we wouldn't hear anything about old comics, and now all of a sudden there's tons of stuff going on.
An avalanche of news from old comics.
Yeah.
So, first of all, we got A Journey into Mystery number 83, the first appearance of Thor in Marvel in 1962, a 9.2 out of 10, which is a really nice copy, sold for $100,000 on Pedigree comic website.
That's crazy. So it sold for $100,000.
$100,000 for a 9.2.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I'm going to pan this purchase, and I'm going to pan Journey into Mystery number 83, right on the airwaves here, and I'm gonna say my opinion is that I think this particular comic book is overvalued.
Right. So and you don't think they should have paid $100,000?
I don't think that Journey into Mystery, the first appearance of Thor in the Marvel Universe, merits the same kind of attention, reverence of, let's say, the first Spider-Man or even the first Iron Man. And the reason is I was always of the mind that Thor is a mythological, Norse deity.
Yeah, right.
He's a Norse god.
Right.
That Marvel kind of
decided to adapt into comic books.
Right, right.
So he is not a new original creation that comics spawned and added to the like the canon of literature.
Right. No. So yeah, he's not entirely new. However,
he's not new at all. What do you mean not entirely new? He's not
but
new.
Marvel's version of it is new.
Yeah, okay. Well, DC had Thor on the cover of Batman.
Nobody cares about that Thor.
Oh, Chris, that's my point.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm saying. Okay, maybe it's what you're saying.
But I'm saying, like, you know, these people obviously cared about that particular one. So obviously if somebody's willing to pay it, it might be worth that much money.
I understand. Obviously, it is worth that much money because somebody did pay it.
Yeah, but you know, there are a lot of crazy people out there. Just because one person is willing to pay that much money doesn't mean like there are 10.
Well, usually it's two people because if it was an auction type, the price was driven
right.
up. But it may not have been an auction type. You're right. Anyway, that just my thought on that. That the early Marvels with all those Marvel created the X-Men and the Fantastic Four and Hulk and Spider-Man and Iron Man and I always thought that Thor was kind of the one that they cheated
shouldn't have been. Right. All right, fair enough. All right. Well, all right. there's more stuff going on.
Oh, more stuff. So over at Metropolis Comics, our friends in New York City, Metropolis Comics, they had a really, really nice copy of Avengers 1, a 9.6 out of 10, which is unheard of. There are only three copies of Avengers 1 at 9.6. It's
wow.
the nicest known copy, like one of the three nicest known copies. And for a first appearance of the Avengers, it got $250,000.
Okay, so now hold on a second here. So this isn't even the first appearance of those characters.
None of the characters.
And yet it's you know 2.5 times what the first appearance of the Thor one was.
Right.
Yet you think this is a good sale.
Yeah, first of all, I didn't say that it was a good sale.
Oh, but, sorry. Okay.
Right. So what? You know, with the movie coming out next year, Greg, can you name me two, at least three, of the original Avengers?
I can name you five of the original Avengers because I'm a professional nerd.
Right.
Go for it.
Thor, Iron Man, the Wasp, Ant-Man, and the Hulk. Not Captain America, though.
Good for you.
Oh, very good.
He came
very
out
good.
In issue number...
Number four.
Right.
Wow, we have a pro with
first
very
good. First Silver Age appearance of Captain America,
yeah.
which
yes.
also had a guest appearance by the Submariner in it.
Yes.
Oh,
my God.
He's good. He's good.
I've never kissed a girl.
I doubt that. I doubt that.
Listen.
Who couldn't kiss you?
I know. Girls.
Oh.
So you're right, though. This is the first appearance of Marvel's premier team. The Avengers, of course, are, you know, Chris, that's beautiful segue you played of the Justice League
yes,
of America.
Well,
this is Marvel's version of the Justice League of America. These are Marvel's heroes banded together.
But that's one. You know what? That's one of the things I always liked about the Avengers. The Avengers had, you know, a lot of the really good characters from the Marvel Universe, but not all of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the Avengers
until recently,
and that's
right.
one of the things I didn't like about it because you know the Justice League had all the DC characters, right? All the good ones, right?
Yes.
Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Green Lantern, you know, all these great characters. But you know, like the Avengers sometimes would have characters like you know Dr. Druid and the Shroud.
Yeah.
And,
Wasp.
Yellow Jacket. Even in the first issue of the Avengers, it had like you know Ant-Man. I mean, I'm not trying to you know say anything about the Ant-Man fans out there, but he's not
hell of a guy.
Ant-Man. Not particularly like first tier.
No, he's not.
I don't see any Ant-Man movies out there right now.
Not yet. Anyway.
Not yet. Supposedly there is one in the works.
Yeah, you're right.
But
you're right.
You know, we'll see.
You're right. You're right. But the thing is, like you say, sometimes. You know, you can point to Marvel's in the 60s Fantastic Four as an example of, you know, the sum of the parts. Sorry, I don't know how to say this.
Synergy.
The synergy, like a lot of lesser characters summed up. Add up way more to this than the sum of their parts. In other
right,
words, you
right.
know, like you know, Invisible Girl, Cap, Fantastic. You know, the
yeah,
thing by himself. You know, Johnny Storm, but you put them together,
and it's a great book.
It's a great book.
Yeah, no, I don't know how many people would actually go out and buy like a Mr. Fantastic book.
Right.
Right. Like
right.
Just working away on this quantum physics again.
Yes. It's like how many guys would buy a Mick Jagger solo album. Exactly my point. But, man, you know, the Stones,
right,
we're all buying.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, all right. So that is big money. Of course, I think some of this money was driven by the frenzy that's is happening with the build-up to the Avengers.
Sure.
But that's what happened with, I guess, the Thor comic, though.
Well, right? Yeah, but so the Thor comic was post-Thor. Post movie,
okay,
you know. So usually they wane a little bit post movie.
Oh.
You know? So maybe had the schmuck sold it in April, he would have got 150. No,
fair enough.
All right, and oh, here's some news too. While we're on this, we're going to talk about old comics for a little bit at the beginning of the show here. Heritage Auctions has scooped Chuck Rosansky's last remaining copies of the original Mile High comic collection.
Yeah.
This is a historic sale. And we all know Chuck. I mean, our producer, Anthony Falcone, had an interview with him in Montreal. Chuck Rosansky, of course, discovered the Mile High collection in the mid-70s, I believe. There were, correct me if I'm wrong, something like 18,000 comics from the mid-1930s to the late 1950s.
Yeah.
The market value today is estimated at $100 million.
That's crazy. That is craziness.
Yes.
You know, and so here's a guy. I mean, obviously he didn't – I mean, he knew what he had, and, you know, he probably got decent money for it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But how would he possibly know that this stuff would be worth this much money then?
Yeah,
right?
He wouldn't. He would.
And it says here, you know, that he actually sold his collection between 1977 and 1987, most of it anyways.
Right.
And so now he's got a few little drips and drabs left over. And
he's got a copy of Red Raven number 1 at CGC 9.0, which is a really nice copy.
Right.
And I believe that is the comic that was just before the Human Torch comic. At number 2, it took over as a Human Torch.
Oh, okay,
title.
Right.
And he has a run of about 150 or so of the Will Eisner Spirits.
Yeah,
Spirits. Yes. So,
you know, I bet he was waiting for that Spirit movie to do really well.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Wah, yeah. Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah. He's had all this Spirits and beautiful.
Yeah, it's going to be big one day. It's big, I tells you. Yeah. Oh, well.
Who's doing that Spirit movie? Is it Miller?
Oh.
How could that be bad?
Yeah.
It's got to be good if it's Miller doing it.
Yeah.
Right. It's Miller time. Anyway, we're going to close out with some more good news on the old comic front. I'm reading on Bleeding Cool today, or yesterday, last night, actually. Some guy, Greg Bartholomew. Of All American Comics and Cards, out in Warren, Ohio.
Yes, this is interesting. So here's a guy out in Warren, Ohio. He discovers a bunch of Batman comics.
Yes.
And the thing that I like about it is the fact that it's in Warren, Ohio.
Isn't that great?
Like in the middle of, like, I've never even heard of it.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
So he finds all these Batman comics. Now, he's got Batman 1-4 and number 9, Detective 23, 26, 28, to 36, and then a bunch of them after that. Marvel Mystery number 29, All American number 8. So he's got a bunch of great comics.
Right, and he's missing, of course, the Detective Comics number 27.
Right.
And, you know, his wife probably 40 years ago lined the birdcage with
him. Yeah,
like that.
Probably.
Where's that 27?
Oh, I think the bird just pooped on it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's good news. It's good news. What the great news is this is an original owner collection. So this is a really old guy that kind of just dredged up his old comics, and so they're still out there to be discovered.
Well, this is the thing. Like, how many more comics do you think? How many more finds do you think you're going to get like this? I mean, is there still that many more, you know, treasure chests of old comic books out there, or is this, you know, are they getting few and far between now?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, they'll all be old one day, Greg. I'm sure one day you're going to get up off of your Liefeld X-Forces or something like that, and, you know, say, "Hey, I had these when I was a kid." You know?
And they'll say, "Put them on the fire, Grandpa."
Yeah,
because
it's kindling. Cold.
Yeah. Anyway, that's good news. Hopefully, we'll hear more on that story, and I'm sure they'll be going up for auction, and I hope the old guy does well with them.
Well, you know, I'm sure he will. It's one of those things where hopefully you always wish these guys to do very well with all these comics, and I think he probably will, but, you know, who knows? Who knows these days, right? But let's just have a quick musical interlude here with your favorite and mine, the Aquaman song.
Oh, that was a favorite of mine.
I know you liked it.
I love it.
I know. Hold on, it's coming.
I love it so much.
There we go.
Aquaman. Aquaman. No one greater than Aquaman. King of Atlantis, king of the sea. Where the
the danger is, that's where he'll be. Always defending you, yeah, you and me. Aquaman. He can swim faster than the fastest thing in the sea or on the land. With Mira, his beautiful queen, beside him, he'll fight with all his might till the end. Oh, you can always depend on mankind's truest friend, Aquaman.
Chris, love that tune. Always makes me thirsty.
Can't explain. You know, it's one of those songs that, you know, it just never seems to end.
Yes.
It just keeps on going.
It seems like that, doesn't it? All right, let's keep moving industry news along. Hey, I want to talk about the new 52. We talked about a couple of the books that came out, the number threes that are coming out today. And, you know, it's number threes are out. Time to take stock a little bit.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that as much as I like talking about New 52, I'm kind of getting tired about talking about New 52.
Yeah, enough with the 52.
Enough with
already.
The 52. We've had, you know, 3 months now of New 52, but apparently it's doing great wonders for the industry.
Great business. Great wonders
business.
For the industry. So I'm reading a little bit on ICV2 there about the guy, the president of Doug Goldstein from IDW.
Yes.
And he's saying that the new 52, the DC's new 52, helped their company in September. They had a great increase in sales over the month before and over the year before. And he's attributing a lot of that to the people, the new people walking in, the people that haven't been in the shops in a while,
right.
The local comic book stores in a while. Come check out these new 52s, and then they're, you know, looking at the new this week, and they're noticing, hey, you know, here's a help me with an IDW.
Doctor
book.
Who.
The Doctor Who book.
Yeah, Transformers, G.I.
Hey,
Joe.
Hey, here's a Transformers, G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
And I'll grab one of those, too, while I'm here.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know what? It's kind of an interesting it's an unintentional marketing ploy, right? Because all of a sudden, all these people who probably collected DC years ago got fed up with the industry, you know, but still like comics, heard about the new 52, thought, you know, I'll give these a chance. And now they're walking in, and they're of that age where they probably are interested in things like Doctor Who and Transformers, G.I.
Yeah.
Joe, all those Ghostbusters and Jurassic Park and all this kind of, you know, cool
mm-hmm.
stuff. So now all of a sudden they walk in, they're like, oh, I'll pick up this Aquaman number 2, and, oh, what's this? I didn't even know there was a new Doctor Who comic. I'll give this a shot, because, you know, maybe they're only used to the old Marvel Doctor Who comic, right? They didn't even know there was a new one. So now they're reading all this stuff.
Perfect. And now our guest Greg, he before the show talking to us about the titles he's reading. Now you've read, like, in the first week, first month, you picked up 51 of them?
Or? Yeah, I picked up 51 of them, and I put down...
Which one?
Then, probably, out of the 51 that I picked up, I put down maybe 45 of them.
No,
right.
But hold on.
Didn't
so.
Buy them. But I wanted to... I hadn't been reading DC books, so I almost was like, I think, the market that DC was after.
Right.
Which was someone who had given up on DC, and I thought, well, this is interesting. This is a good jumping-on point. And so I want to give a lot of these books a shot. And in a way, I read them as a new reader, even though I technically wasn't a new reader.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of had the frame of mind, like, if I don't know anything and I'm picking this up, am I going to enjoy this?
Right.
And
could you separate that? Did you have to consciously
so.
Try to separate it? Because you obviously had read, you know, Flash before or something.
Yeah.
But now you're reading Flash again, and you kind of have to trick yourself, convince yourself, okay, I'm going to pretend like I've never read Flash before. Is that the way you approach
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's the way I totally. And mm-hmm. and I think I, in my mind, I thought I did okay. Plus, in a way of, I mean, actually, I was buying a lot of DC books probably in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a while.
Right.
And so, I mean, enough has sort of happened that I didn't.
A lot of it would be still fresh to you anyways.
Yeah, yeah. So it did seem new. And I mean, some of the, I don't, on the whole, I think a lot of the books failed.
Right. So you said you read what, 17 or 19?
I read 19 number ones. And then I was like, you know, which number twos? And I wanted.
How many number twos did you
pick wanted up? To like these. Like, right, I right, bought right. them wanting this to succeed.
Right.
I dropped two of them. So I was down to 17 number
twos. That's not
twos.
Bad, though.
Not bad.
DC hearing that, they're saying, hey, yeah, we did pretty
okay.
good.
Yeah.
But then as far as the number twos went, the number threes, even though it's going to be this month, mm-hmm. for in what I buy, and I my comic store, I hope the guy that runs that comic store that I go to doesn't hear this.
No.
Because, I mean, I'm not going to buy nearly as many, because some of those number twos were just like, yeah, I'm done.
Right. Oh, yeah, that bad.
You know, eh? Well, and even some of the number ones were borderline. They right. all ended with a cliffhanger.
Well, of course. Well, that, but that, I don't mind that. You know,
no, but it really was like it's making you buy a number two. So right. there were a few of them that I was like, eh, well, maybe this was mildly interesting, or they right, set right. something interesting up but didn't go anywhere with it. Maybe number two will sort of give me more, and some of them didn't.
Now, of course, you and I briefly talked about this before the show, and of course, DC's one of the ideas behind all this was to stir things up a bit, but also to make sure that it was a good jumping on point for everybody, right? Because now you could go out and buy DC number one, and it was a good jumping on point. Now, what about number twos? And you know, have you? I don't know if you've read any of the number threes yet, because it's just starting this month.
They just,
but, you know, the number two is like, could you read a number two and kind of figure out what's going on, or is it already like all convoluted and
yeah. Well, you know what? Actually, and maybe I'm just dumb, but because I actually read it just the other day. But I really liked Flash number one.
Right.
And I read number two, and I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
Partially because I couldn't remember what happened in number one. Right.
Right, right.
But I was like, oh, this is really well drawn and everything, but I can't remember what's happened.
Right. Well, and this is the thing, you know, I mean.
No one's going to be picking up number twos. Like, they were, and because they were all, like, no one's going to start at number two,
yeah,
and get anything out of it.
Well, I mean, unless they couldn't find one of the reprints or something yeah. like that. But I mean, you know, you and I were talking about how, you know, one of the main reasons why DC did this was, as I said, it's a jumping on point. And then Jim Shooter on his blog said, well, all comics, every issue should be a jumping on point, which is a great idea. You know, I agree. Like, you know, and that's.
Yeah, well, I disagree in a way, because those are all basically one off stories. I mean, if you're telling a larger story and it's a 6-part story, you're weighing down part three by kind of recapping quickly. I mean, you can do that recap on that page one, but in the structure of the story, you don't want to bog it down by referencing the first two parts.
Yeah, but still, when I first started getting into comics, which was in the early 80s, mm-hmm. You know, and I started picking up Marvel comics, even though I was like, you know, I'd say by Avengers 211.
Right.
Because that's what was in the Variety store. And I didn't feel lost or alienated, even okay. though it might have been in the middle of a story. And the problem is these days also, everything is written so much to be ultimately a trade paperback.
Yes.
Yeah.
That
yes.
you know, and I used to like that about especially Marvel Comics back in the 80s, that a story could go 2 issues, it could go
40.
Or yeah, yeah. you never knew when it was going to end, whereas now you're pretty sure when it says part 5 of 6.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't going to conclude this issue. Yeah.
Okay, this should be wrapping up
now. This is a great yeah. jumping off point.
Yeah, yeah. exactly. Yeah. yeah, and I've used that before when
yeah.
it's like
me too.
Part 6 of 6.
Yeah. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done. Yeah.
I'm done with this title because I didn't enjoy that enough.
All right, fair enough. Hey, let's talk about Tintin, the movie. We have a review from our intrepid reporter.
I say,
Mr. Champion. Back
Daniel at, Champion from yes. merry old England.
Yes, he emailed saying that he requested a press pass on the Comic Culture Radio Show, and they kicked him out of onto the streets of Soho. Say, blimey!
Crikey!
Right. Bloody hell.
Oh, sorry, that's Australian.
That's the crocodile guy. Right.
Sorry.
You call that a knife? Well, that was terrible, whatever I did.
That was awful.
Yeah.
Poor Danny Champion's going to be rolling in his grave. Oh, he's not dead yet.
No, right. He might be out of his skin.
Yeah. He sleeps in a coffin, though.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah, I did hear about that.
Anyway, Mr. Champion on Comic Book Daily wrote a beautiful review on Tintin, the movie. He really liked it. Says that we all, as North American audiences, have a lot to look forward to when the movie is released this coming December. He basically talks a lot about in his review about how it's very much Spielberg's vision. Very much has the Raiders of the Lost Ark feel to the pacing and the cinematography. Of course, there is no cinematography, right? Because it's all. Well, not CGI, but it's like animated.
Well, yeah, it's that
stop motion or whatever the heck
it is CGI, essentially.
Yeah, but it's,
but it's not CGI.
It's sort of like a mix, right?
The backgrounds are.
Right, but I mean the characters are sort of done in that virtual.
Motion capture.
Yes, motion capture.
All right. So he's saying, this is really good. This is kind of a vision, Peter Jackson, Steven Spielberg, and I got to thinking reading this review. You know, when it hits North America, if it hits big, if it succeeds in North America, you know, will the Steven Spielberg Tintin usurp the Herge Tintin as the Tintin that we all kind of the interpretation, the look, everything about the Tintin. Will the Spielberg Tintin be the Tintin going forward?
Well, you know what? I think it's a good question. I don't think so, because I think much like characters like Spider-Man, Batman, there's always been sort of an interpretation, and I think somebody else is going to come along eventually and have Herge's Tintin and do their own thing. Even though Spielberg's was good, I don't think it's going to be like the ultimate Tintin that people are thinking of. I think it's still going to be Herge's Tintin.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Fair enough. I mean, if it gets people to read the old translated graphic novels, albums as they're called, right.
It may be a case of when they think of the Herge character, they may only know it from Spielberg.
Right.
So then
I think a lot of people in North America are going to be that way because I think there's going to be a lot of people that don't even know that it even was a comic book.
For sure.
People never knew that the Smurfs was anything.
Right.
It was a comic that was French. And you still hear people... I would remember, especially when the first Batman, the Tim Burton Batman movie came out, they were like, oh, there's a comic book based on, or Tim Burton's Batman based on the TV show with Adam West from the 60s.
Yeah.
And it's like the comic book is just a side thing, much the way there was like Star Wars comic books.
Yeah.
Right.
But you're right. Like, let's say Adam West, if we can use – that's a great example because, you know, we kind of on the table here as purists want to think about the Kane Batman and that old early Batman.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, a lot of people in the 80s and 90s that – in the 70s that they think that Adam West, that's the way that's Batman.
That's
right?
Batman.
That's that
for
campy
sure, for sure.
thing is Batman. And really, that's not Batman. In a way, it set Batman back.
Yeah.
And Batman had to be kind of retaken back to the night. You know,
yes,
Batman had to be retaken.
Away from that campiness.
As that kind of dark Gotham, you know, look.
Sure.
The Tim Burton one, that whole Frank Miller stuff.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
And I mean, that's true because, you know, like, for example, I've never read, I mean, even though I knew about it, I've never read any of the Lord of the Rings novels.
Mm-hmm.
But when I think of them, I obviously think of the Peter Jackson movies. I can't see anybody else topping those movies as far as Lord of the Rings goes. And, you know, I just, you know, that's going to be it for me kind of thing, unless I decide to go to some other medium like a video game or something
right.
like that.
Right.
And now probably you could not read those books without imagining
absolutely,
the movie characters.
Especially because I haven't read them before, so every time I would read them, it would be like I would picture those guys playing them as Boromir or whoever it happens to be, right?
All right. So thanks, Danny Champion, for that great review at Comic Book Daily. By the way, Danny has a new – he's an actually artist, our intrepid reporter.
Yes, he is.
He does a online webcomic called Celerity, and that is starting to be posted on comicbookdaily.com. So
awesome.
Check Danny's work out on comicbookdaily.com.
Awesome.
All right, let's go over to Dark Horse planning Origin of the Jedi comic. Now, Chris, explain to me what Origin of the Jedi is going to be.
Well,
doing
okay,
here.
So basically, Dark Horse is coming out with a comic that's supposed to explain how the Jedi's came around,
how the origin
of the Jedi, right? Like, I mean, so basically, that's it. Like, it's going to take place 25,000 years before the movies took place. So it's
25,000
years before the events of the films. So now,
a really long time,
really
ago,
long time
in
ago.
The galaxy,
really, yeah, really, in, really long yeah. time ago.
So basically, and this is interesting because, really, I don't think George Lucas ever—I don't even know if he ever thought about how these guys came around,
right?
But it's such a phenomenon that people are rabid for everything. The more Star Wars stuff, and it's gotten to a point now where it's sort of surpassed just the purists. Because I remember years ago, there were a lot of people out there, myself included, years ago, you know, if it wasn't the movies, I didn't really care too much about it. But now you've been inundated with so much Star Wars stuff that you're kind of like, well, okay, this is a kind of a neat idea. And, you know, okay, the video games, I can kind of get that. It doesn't have my favorite characters in it, but, you know, I don't mind playing some character that I've never heard of because it's still Star Wars and it's still a neat idea.
Right.
So I think, and people are, like, interested to find out all this new world of Star Wars that people keep on thinking about.
Well, let's take it back to, if I can, to Peanuts, right?
Right.
So Star Wars is a property, you know, and it has that vision of Lucas and all that thing. But people love it so much that they're extrapolating from it and they're creating new worlds from the premise even.
I think the difference, though, is with Star Wars, it's so huge that you can have all these – they can create new characters and new ideas and nobody's going to get offended because
– you can have Peanuts – great-great-great-grandfather playing baseball in 1850.
Okay, you could, but that's not what they're doing with the new comic. They're having the same characters.
Okay, but my point, though, is you can
you could,
can do
yeah.
either or.
Right, right.
My point. But what I find just so amazing with this thing is that you can take a property like Star Wars and create 1,000 different worlds around the Star Wars.
Sure, thing, as long as it's good enough. Yeah, I agree.
Right, like you Star Wars
what
fan?
What do you think, Greg?
I can see how it's – I mean, it's easily done because, I mean, science fiction lends itself – or this type of science fiction lends itself because you got planets and races of aliens and good guys and bad guys. And you don't – you know, they've already kind of proved with the comics and novels, too, that you don't need the main characters. It doesn't have to be about Luke Skywalker to be necessarily interesting.
Right.
They've already done backstory stuff because I guess the video games like the Old Republic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sounds like this comic is going back even farther.
Yeah.
And again, the nice thing about it in a way is you can ignore it and it doesn't take away from what you want to acknowledge.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But if you're a fan of the Star Wars universe, of everything, and you might not even – because, I mean, there are people out there who they like the original. It's like, you know, the 4, 5, and 6, you know, Luke Skywalker, Vader, and all that. And they don't really care for the new ones, but they still like the whole universe. They'll still go back and they'll say, okay, you know what? I don't really care for how it became – you know, how Darth Vader became Darth Vader, but I still like the idea of the Jedi's and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm still going to be interested in play the games.
Quick question. Is it true that originally there were 9 volumes? So there's a 7, 8, and 9 in the original book?
The original idea.
In the original idea there was, yeah.
Will there be a 7, 8, and 9 movie?
I think George has said no.
No?
But I've also read things recently where he's like sort of...
another $3 billion in my pocket?
Yeah,
maybe.
True enough. Right. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Guys, let's move it along. We got one more story before we jump over to Greg.
Yes.
What?
Hey, let's
talk about
Wizard World Toronto.
Yes. So basically, Wizard World has now decided to move the dates of their show in Toronto to April 14th and 15th for 2012, and they're moving it to the Metro Toronto Convention Center, which is where the Fan Expo,
which is war,
which is where they always had their show or have right. their show, and so this is sort of like, you know, they're encroaching on their turf.
Kind of in a way, you're right. Yeah. They're encroaching on two turfs. Here.
How so?
Well, that is also the weekend of C2E2 in Chicago. Now, C2E2, hold on.
Yep.
C2E2 in Chicago is that large Chicago convention.
Right.
But you got to remember that in Wizard World's domain of shows, their jewel is the Wizard World Chicago show in August.
Absolutely, yeah.
And what they're doing here is they're doing a little defense and offense in one fell swoop.
Yes.
So what they're doing here is they're, even though minimally, they are adversely affecting C2E2, even if it's only 17 people that are going to stay in Toronto and not go to C2E2.
But it's not necessarily that. It's also like, what are the guests going to do?
Right. Well, in a way, yeah, exactly right, Greg.
And they only have a certain budget, and they may not be able to go, especially maybe Marvel and DC can, but maybe someone like Dark Horse can't say, we got to only go to one.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, I can't remember how it works, but I think with Wizard World, for a lot of artists that, there's sort of like a contract that you got to go to a couple different Wizard World shows if you're going to go to, like, as far as the bigger names go. So maybe, you know, they'll be like, hey, sorry, you can't go to C2E2. You have to go to the Toronto show.
And that's really, I think, what it's all about. It's not to get fans away.
It's to lock
guests. Same thing happened
or
in conventions.
Like you said, right?
Publishers, yeah. Same thing happened in the 90s. There was like convention wars
going on.
Basically everybody kind of crumbled and went out of business, and all built itself back.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. But, you know, that is a kind of defensive position defending their, Wizard World Chicago show in August. You can see it, as we just mentioned, with everything we just talked about. But also, it is a kind of aggressive move into Fan Expo territory in a way, saying, hey, we still believe in our Toronto show. We not only are going to have another Toronto show, but we're going to move it to the same venue that you're having
rarely has happened.
Yes.
Before. Yeah. You'd at least pick another venue.
Yeah, right. It's different. But so,
because the fan isn't going to know.
Yeah.
Most fans aren't going to notice that it's not run by the same people. They're just thinking, oh, comic convention.
Yeah.
And if one really, really sucks.
Yes.
This was a great convention last time. Boy, those people really dropped the ball. I won't go to their next one, even though it's not the same people running.
It's very possible. So yeah, that's true.
That sort of thing could happen.
Yeah.
I can't see it. I mean, I can't see it. Listen, Fan Expo puts on an amazing show, and these guys have the work to do to prove themselves. Fan Expo has the work to do basically to stay as good as they are and maybe just one up it every year.
Not take advantage of the fact that they get an amazing crowd.
That they're good, right?
They do a good job, and I personally want nothing but bad things to happen to Wizard.
Oh, on that note, let's go to a musical interlude.
I don't get invited to their shows. I wonder why.
Made sure of that again.
Yeah. No, actually, I did get invited to one of their shows, and they were like, "And
you used to?"
No, not when Wizard. The Wizard stuff. I got invited to when ChicagoCon before Wizard. But it was great because then Wizard. I remember they phoned me up and like, "Hey, do you want to come to our convention?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Yeah, it would only be $1,500 for a table." And I'm like, "Yeah, you're got to be,
joking."
Yes.
Joking is what I said.
Anyway,
we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Let's
Metamorpho?
No, I don't know. I don't have that one yet.
I'll get you.
Okay, would you? That'd be great. We're gonna go with the Superman theme.
That's good stuff. You know, that original Superman movie, you know who stole that? Like, that whole movie, the best part of the first Superman movie, as good as it was, still think it's the best superhero movie of all time. The best part of that whole Superman movie was that funky funkadelic sepia tony scene where Marlon Brando is talking.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Greg, hello?
Yeah, I remember that part.
He didn't like that part at all?
Well, he played Jor-El, right?
Yeah.
Oh, the very beginning part. On Krypton. Yeah. It was all freaky.
Yeah.
I love that part.
That was pretty good.
That was the best part.
And I'll just say something about the music is, as I've heard it been said, like all good Superman themes, you can sing the word Superman to it.
Really? Can you do that for this
Superman,
one?
Superman! See, it works! Superman! See?
That's true.
Yeah, if you can't sing the word Superman to it, then it's not working.
Doesn't work. That doesn't really work with Batman, does it?
No, but it's easy. There was a...
Well, I guess that one works. Well, that one does.
Sang it. They gave you the lyrics.
How about na 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 Batman?
I thought that was a theme from The Godfather.
Yeah.
Na na na.
Anyways. On to our Greg. Read the sponsors.
Well, I heard that. I guess this is new. There's a Greg Hyland portion of the show, and the Greg Hyland portion of the show is brought to you by Ninjas. Those sneaky jerks.
Yeah, they do get sneaky.
I didn't know that they had the budget to advertise.
Well, yeah, apparently they do.
That's
apparently
great.
They pay in shurikens.
Good yes. for...
They lay low.
Yeah.
Good for them.
All right, Greg, so where do I begin? You've been doing comics and animation since, like, what, 1990,
89?
My first official comic book came out in 1991, although I was doing mini comics
in 1988. Now, you're one of those guys that you would go to the stores and you drop off your pile of comics at the store, hoping that, you know, nobody would use them to wipe up stuff or they wouldn't get thrown out as flyers people would pay like what, a quarter or 50 cents or something like that for them.
Yep.
And then eventually you seem to grow enough of a fan base that people let you actually got a full comic.
That's, yeah, I mean, we realized we were like selling like 400 plus copies of our mini comics, and mini comics was like, you know, before the internet. I mean, now you'd have a web comic, which I have at lethargiclad.com.
Right.
Anyway, lethargiclad.com.
That's right. But yeah, I mean, we were selling so many that we thought, let's self-publish this. And this was the early 90s, just as the big self-publishing black and white boom was starting. So we got in there with like a lot of, you know, we started out with a lot of good people.
Now, we don't have a whole lot of time, unfortunately, but I just want to...
It's because you're singing Superman.
I know. We're going to cut to a few things very quickly here. So now, I know, like, you know, you in one of your covers, you had artist, painter extraordinaire Alex Ross do the cover, help you with the cover on that, one of those. How did that come about?
Well, we were doing parody covers, which, I mean, a lot of people are doing parody covers, but we kind of kept with it.
Right.
But we kind of got this, you know, people wanting... To both, first of all, they wanted to be the covers. I would get, like, creators come to me and say, when are you doing me?
Right.
When are you doing something based on my stuff? Then I would get people saying, I want to do a cover for you. And we had people like Dave Dorman and Jeff Smith and Dave Sim helped out. And then one day, young Alex Ross phoned me up and said, I'd already asked him to do a cover. And he was like, no. Because I kind of knew him. We have a mutual friend. So I kind of knew him. I even kind of knew him before he was big.
Right, right.
And he phoned me up one day and he's like, I'm doing this new comic called Marvels. I'm doing this new comic called Kingdom Come.
Right, right.
And number one hadn't come out yet. And he's like, I'll do a cover for you based on this. And he even like mailed me like the pencil version.
Right.
Because the book hadn't come out yet. And I was like, of course, do what you want, right? And he did a cover for me. It was our biggest selling issue, partially because my publisher at the time didn't promote it,
right?
Because they didn't believe that I actually had Alex Ross do the cover,
because
they thought I had somebody named Alex Ross,
but it wasn't really Alex Ross,
because they had asked.
Love it.
They had asked Alex Ross to do a cover of one of their books, and he said no.
Well, I know this has become, I mean, for Alex Ross collectors out there, which there are lots of, this has sort of become a bit of a holy grail, because there's like, what, like 3,000?
There's
copies?
Only three, yeah. I think it sold 35,000.
Yeah, 3,500. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, that's, you know, that's not very many, especially if for Alex
I
Ross
believe, and there. I never saw this, but I believe there was a Wizard article that called it.
Yeah.
It and some one other thing.
I think
that
I remember that.
Did,
yeah, yeah.
Said it was, these are the rarest.
The hardest ones to find. Yeah,
Alex Ross. And Still, though, I actually don't have any.
You're kidding.
But I see them at concerts.
You must have one.
I do. I've got about five of them.
Right, okay.
But I see them at concerts about $10. So still, if you really want one. you don't have to go crazy to pay for one. Right.
Well, so now, sorry, I'm sort of taking over.
No,
the
go
show
ahead.
Here.
Hey, listen, you.
Now, because
your questions are better than mine.
We're running out of time here. Now, I know. So, you know, fast forward. You know, you start doing work for Dork Tower. This is a game company, right? This is John Kovalik's Dork Tower.
Yes,
they had it was a game, right?
No.
Oh.
No, it wasn't. But he does comics based on gaming and is hugely...
Oh, I'm sorry. That's what it
and
is.
He does a lot of work in gaming and is hugely successful there. So he asked me to do backup Lethargic Lad because he was a Lethargic Lad fan.
Now, what's the... Now, you did do some work on games,
yes.
Actual games. What was that called?
That was with a company called Steve Jackson Games.
Okay.
Which John had worked for, and at first... He suggested me for a game that he didn't have time to do called Munchkin Foo.
Right. Okay.
And Steve Jackson Games liked my work enough that they kept giving me other games to do.
Right.
So that was a nice kind of... I don't know anything about games.
So then all of a sudden now you're doing all this game stuff and somehow you start working on Lego. Now you're one of the premier Lego artists out there. You're doing art for the boxes. You're doing art for storyboards. You did something for the Red Brick Saga, which was like a Lego Pirates of the Caribbean kind of thing, right?
And Harry Potter.
And Harry Potter.
Yeah, well, and actually now Star Wars as well.
And it was showing on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, it showed on Nickelodeon. It's little stop-motion animated little spots that are funny, and I storyboarded them.
Right.
And, they were shown on Nickelodeon. You can see them on YouTube. There's four of them. Star Wars, Harry Potter, Pirates of the Caribbean, and another one for Alien Conquest, which is a Lego's own line, which is basically like Mars Attacks. It's actually pretty cool.
Okay, so unfortunately we've run out of time, but you know what? If somebody wants to get in touch with you, I know. We're sorry. Too much Superman singing. If somebody wants to get in touch with you, how do they go about doing it? If they want to see more
somebody
of your stuff?
Somebody wants to do a cover for Lethargic Lad, where do they contact?
Well, my website is lethargiclad.com.
Okay, and your email is on there?
My email is on there.
All right. So well, that's fantastic. Thank you. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. This has been a dream come true.
Yes, it should be. Comic Culture is written and produced by Anthony Falcone. Well, written by Chris Owen and Walter Duralia, produced by Anthony Falcone and written by Anthony Falcone. And engineered by James McIntosh.
That guy's great.
For comments and suggestions, get on to comicbookdaily.com or getthepointradio.com. Scroll down to the comments field and please add your comments.
And remember, comic books don't have an expiry date, so you can eat them whenever you want.
Yes, and please go out and support your local comic book store.
I will.